I'm Hillary Hendershot, your host, and this is Profit Boss Radio, episode 89. Profit Boss Radio is your weekly wealth mastermind. Profit Boss is also a community and a movement for women who are ready to take control of their money, break the glass ceiling, and give ourselves permission to finally have enough. Want the secrets of wealth to be yours? This is the place. I'm Hillary Hendershot. I'm a certified financial planner running a leading advisory firm for women, and I'm sharing with you real stories from real life and real women who are making it happen. Forget Wall Street. Let's do this, ladies. Ready for a financial reboot in the new year? Feeling like you're unsure of what to do next with your money? Well, I have an exciting event coming up this January that can change everything for you. I'm hosting Profit Boss Live, a one-day in-person event focused on women building wealth. At Profit Boss Live, you'll have the chance to meet other like-minded women and really connect and talk about money in a safe space that's a totally judgment-free zone. Because let's be honest, money talk is usually cold, boring, and uncomfortable. At Profit Boss Live, we'll enjoy a warm, inviting, fun atmosphere where you can connect, share stories, laugh, and even learn together. And yes, there will be a cocktail or two. Find out more at profitbosslive.com. Listen, the last thing you need next year is more uncertainty, especially when it comes to your finances. At Profit Boss Live, you will create a customized, detailed, and actionable wealth plan custom fit to your financial goals. You'll know which steps to take to save, spend, and invest wisely so you can stop worrying about money or wasting what you've worked so hard to earn. Come meet me and your new money mastermind in San Jose on Friday, January 19th for this all-day event. Go to ProfitBossLive.com to get registered. That's ProfitBossLive.com. Don't delay, though. Early bird pricing only lasts until December 18th, so buy now to save $100 off the ticket price. That's ProfitBossLive.com. So if you're listening to this episode as it airs on December 19th, 2017. It's the last episode before Christmas, and I wanted to say happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. Please know how special you are to me. We're getting our house and family ready for Christmas over here. You know, I get to celebrate it with lots of family. We have about 30 people at our family Christmas, and little Harlan is just 18 months old. She doesn't really quite get the idea of Christmas yet. She's kind of figuring out how to open gifts, but you know, it's still just a really special time. And wherever you are and with whomever you celebrate, I'm sending you love and prosperity and gratitude for the time that we spent together. Thank you. You have lots of podcasts to choose from. Thank you for choosing mine. I really, truly appreciate you. Happiest of holidays.
Today on Profit Boss Radio, we're talking about how to keep sexual harassment from impacting your wealth. I know that so many of you have been victims of sexual harassment, and we broached this topic in the private Facebook group, and the general consensus was that, yes, this is a topic that can affect your money. And while the social ramifications of movements like Me Too and what's happened in Hollywood and Washington post the Harvey Weinstein scandal are probably out of the scope of this show, it is relevant to your money if you're in a situation where you're the victim of sexual harassment and you end up having to leave your job or worse, getting fired. I myself have had a few instances of sexual harassment over my career. The first was actually pretty scary. It was my first corporate job. It was an internship here in Silicon Valley. And I'm going to admit right up front that I was flirtatious with this person who was 12 years older than me. And I think I was 18 or 19 years old, maybe 20. And I really I did not know better. And I know that sounds crazy to say, but I didn't. I just absolutely did not know what I know now. And that was sort of my currency as a 19-year-old, was like, I flirt. It was just the way that I was. So I was willing to flirt with him over email, but you know, he wanted me to come to his house and he wanted to take things further. And I did not want to go there and I declined, and he kind of lost it. I got a bunch of threatening emails, and then he ended up chasing me around the office, and he was yelling to other coworkers that he saw me in a pornography video. I was absolutely terrified. And it was really close to the end of my agreed upon contract for the internship. Like, I think there was like a week left in the summer. And what management did was they pulled those emails and they had them printed up when they called me into the office to deal with this happening. And there were three male managers in that room. And they basically said, "You asked for this. We're willing to forgive you. You can take your last week off and just go home. We won't tell anybody and we won't give you a bad reference." And I completely blamed myself, and I left with my tail between my legs. And in retrospect, you know, I was still the victim of something that never should have happened. And it's really crappy what those three male managers did to me that day. I so wish that a woman in that department had taken me under her wing and explained, you know, what the hell had happened and had been supportive of me. I was really damaged for several months over what happened. And after that, there have been a few males who had to be told, you know, not to give me shoulder rubs, and no, I wasn't going to go out with them. So those instances were much less dramatic than the first. And I'm sure you've got your story, lady, but the point of today's episode is to help you navigate these muddy waters without it costing you a coin. I have two interviews for you today. They're both lawyers, and they both have very different perspectives on this issue. The first is Tucker Miller. She's the vice president of client development consulting for Eli, which is a training company that helps organizations improve workplace culture. She's also conducted workplace investigations into complaints of sexual harassment and discrimination and served as an expert trial witness. The other guest is Darren Lipinski. He is a trial attorney. He's the guy you'd hire if you did have some horrible and egregious thing happen at work and had to sue. So I'll introduce him again after we listen to my conversation with Tucker. There are some real gems here, including her specific recommendations for how to bring a complaint to HR, literally what to say so that you are most likely to get the thing worked out to your satisfaction. Enjoy. Tucker, thanks for joining me on Profit Boss Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to this. In the pre-chat, I described it as a primer on how a woman can navigate the workplace, avoid sexual harassment, and most specifically for this show, avoid having it impact your cash flow, income, retirement savings, and like that. So let's just start from the top. In your experience, or, you know, I don't know from a legal perspective if there are categories, but for example, what are the different types or sort of flavors of sexual harassment? Are they broken down, you know, into lists or something? How does someone know if they're being harassed?
That's a big question there. So one of the first things from a legal, I'll put my lawyer hat on here initially. The first thing is that when you talk about sexual harassment, you've accurately identified that there's a couple of categories, and they are addressed in the law, the first being quid pro quo. If you work in the federal government sector, they now refer to it as tangible employment action. And that's the instance where you have a person in a position of authority or power who's engaging in a practice of sexual favors being promised that if they're acted on or not acted on, your job will get better or worse. And that's the, if you go out with me, you'll get hired. If you don't go out with me, you'll get fired. And I'm saying go out, but it's, you know, a range of usually very blatant and egregious behavior. And that if that behavior does happen in a way that is to the detriment of the targeted individual, then that could be in support of a claim for quid pro quo. Mm-hmm. The other form of harassment, sexual harassment, is really applicable to a broader range of harassment, and that's called hostile work environment. And so we're talking about it as certainly a form of sexual harassment, but it could apply to other behaviors that would target people for reasons other than just sex. So you have behavior that's happening in the workplace generally, and it could be by anybody, customers, leaders, coworkers, members of the public, could be anybody who engages in behavior that the targeted individual or individuals regard to be offensive and unwelcome, and that singles them out on the basis of a protected class. And when we're talking about sexual harassment, it's on the basis of gender. But the same structure around sexual harassment and its definition could be applied to issues of age, sexual orientation, etc. And so in that instance, when someone says, you know, I feel that it's offensive and unwelcome, once the organization, the company, is made aware of that complaint, then they have a responsibility to take prompt and effective action to stop the behavior. And that's really a key part for your listeners, is that it really is important for them that if they're experiencing this kind of behavior, in order for there to be the obligation of the organization to respond to it, if it's a hostile work environment type of claim, the person needs to raise the issue and bring it to their attention, because until the company is made aware of it, they may not have an independent obligation to address it.
So let's say let's just take the sort of quintessential situation. Your boss is coming on to you and it's making you uncomfortable. So I think you have to tell him it's making you uncomfortable. And then what you just said is you have to tell the company. Is it both?
It's either or both.
Oh.
So it's one or the other or both. And the reason being is that you're asked to speak up to an agent of the company, and the boss, as a manager or leader, is an agent of the company. And so, theoretically, the point at which you tell that leader, that manager, this is offensive and unwelcome, then that puts the company on notice. Now, whether or not that boss then goes immediately to say, hey, someone just put us all on notice because I was called out for my behavior, that's another question. And you can imagine that it's unlikely that a manager would do that.
The word unlikely also yeah. came to my mind.
Yeah. Highly unlikely. So this is one of those challenges for organizations, is that they really need certainly people who will stop when they're asked to stop. And if the behavior stops when it's been requested that it stop, then that may be the end of the story. But if the behavior persists and it's not something that anyone but the manager knows about it, mm-hmm. then that's where you've got the issues. Now, the other thing that I think is really important is that if you're the person experiencing unwanted, offensive, unwelcome behavior, you certainly may speak up to your boss if you're comfortable doing that, but it's if you're comfortable, and you can just imagine, any of us could,
you're not gonna
how
be
hard that would be,
yeah.
right? Because that person holds all the cards. They have all the power, and they're affecting, you know, your livelihood, your job, everything. And so that's why there's multiple avenues that companies are asked, and in my experience usually do provide, that you need not speak up directly to the person who makes you feel uncomfortable. But you can raise the issue then, or should raise the issue, to an alternate agent of the company. So it could be human resources, another manager. Many companies have hotlines available to report the concern. So somewhere, somehow, you should bring the concern forward so that it can be addressed. And while it would be great if you could deal directly with a manager and feel confident that that would resolve it, I think most of us recognize that would be a very hard choice to make.
Yes, I've done it. It's very uncomfortable. okay, so I think the quid pro quo, your job or a promotion or money for sex or sexual favors or dates, is a pretty straightforward, people sort of understand what that is. Mm-hmm. The hostile work environment is any unwanted advances or touching or comments, and obviously a hostile work environment can be far more broad scope than just sexual harassment. That just happens to be the topic du jour. Anything I missed there?
You know, I love the way you summarized it, because what's hard about hostile work environment is it could be so much of so many different things. And I once had someone come up to me after I described it, and his response was, "So that's the anything by anybody form of harassment." And I thought that was brilliant. It was better than any legal definition I'd ever heard, that literally any kind of behavior that if it's offensive and unwelcome and affects a person's ability to perform their job, there is a requirement of seriousness there with it. But it could be things relatively subtle, and then you've hit this tipping point where it's starting to have an impact or affect someone in their ability to do their job. So any kind of behavior, and it may be all of the above, you know, the full range, it may be a couple of things, and then it's by anybody. It's not exclusively by a manager, an agent of the company. It could be literally anyone on the planet. And if that's happening and they're singled out on the basis of a protected class, then that could be that hostile work environment. So it's very, very broad.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. And so let's talk about how it can go and how you hope it doesn't go in terms of, so the worst case scenario I'm thinking of is someone has to lose their job. So In your experience, after a sexual harassment, or let's just say a hostile, I think the quid pro quo is pretty egregious. I'm hoping that the perpetrator of that is always terminated. I don't know. I don't even hear about that really happening anymore because it is so egregious. But, you know, for example, actually, let me stay on that topic for a second. I had a friend who was a HR director here in Silicon Valley, and she used to tell me she was the one who would investigate these claims. And in her opinion, if you were a woman working for a high-tech company who got harassed, you were owed a check anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000. Now, I am not asking this because I want the women listening to my show to get sexually harassed so that they can get a check for $100,000 at all, okay? But I'm just asking, into your experience, are there still these payoffs happening, or what's the fallout from these egregious accusations?
I think sometimes things do get resolved short of going to court. And so there is that possibility. I don't think it's a payoff to silence people. I think it's an acknowledgement a lot of times that, yes, there's been some wrongdoing. Whether or not it's as egregious as, you know, one person might think or another, or whether or not it would prevail at court, there's an acknowledgement here of a situation that it's not unusual that there would be some form of settlement. And quite frankly, from the perspective of your listeners, you talked about the financial payoff, but the opportunity to resolve something without it going to court, without it being a public matter, without your all of your information being laid open, and this could be a years long process in the making, that it's usually to the mutual benefit. The thing that caught me, though, in your question was how you started it off, that in the instance of a quid pro quo, you'd like to think that everybody who engages in that gets fired. And I don't know what your colleagues' experience is, but I don't think that's always the case.
Really?
And I think that's really the challenge. And there could be disputed facts. There could be multiple perspectives about that. There could be any number of explanations for why a company wouldn't necessarily terminate someone. And I've been in a situation where I have been called in on an individual instance where someone has received a number of complaints for inappropriate behavior. Some of the complaints being egregious, but the facts and the investigation didn't necessarily substantiate the claims, but there was enough interest by the company to rehabilitate or train or coach or correct or discipline in some other fashion to ensure that those complaints were not going to continue, that that behavior was going to change if in fact it was as alleged. So I don't think every situation would necessarily, where there was a complaint, would necessarily end in a termination.
Sure. I mean, it's a delicate subject to broach, but a complaint doesn't necessarily mean that that's what happened. Everybody deserves a fair trial, right?
Right.
So let's kind of turn the tables a little bit. Can a subordinate harass a manager?
Yes. And yes, most definitely. So that would be in that category of hostile work environment. And that's the anybody piece. Mm-hmm. So where quid pro quo literally has to be a person in a position of authority acting out for someone who is subordinate to them. When we look at hostile work environment, it's not the same power play. It's more of a social power or influence or a range of behavior that could be acted out, and that our assessment of whether or not it's illegal or inappropriate or in violation of standards is not based on whether or not the person is in a position of authority, but it's really looking very specifically at the conduct itself and its impact on the target individuals.
Now, what about workplace consensual workplace romantic relationships? Mm-hmm. There are plenty of people who met their spouse at work, mm-hmm. okay? But this can turn into a really big problem, because if you go yes. out and you break up or it goes badly, now you're in trouble. Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like if I could put my arm around a 20-something and say to her, this is my advice to you, don't fish off the company pier, and that it would mean she would lose out on some potential for, you know, a few relationships. But I just feel mm-hmm. like it's a bad idea.
I really appreciate that response, because I think when you're thinking about, you know, what's the best way that I can plan a successful career,
exactly.
I really feel like keeping the relationship piece separate, and, you know, I'm going back to your initial question around, and what if the relationship doesn't keep going, and what if we break up, or what if we get married and then we're divorced? There's so many complexities, and there are any number of fine examples of couples who work together in companies and it's gone beautifully, but there are so many other ones where it does add a layer of complexity. And even if the company policy doesn't specifically prohibit it for all the reasons that you've identified, that's definitely a place where, you know, you want to be mindful of, is this worth the risk? You did ask about, if I'm in a consensual relationship, could that later be perceived as some form of sexual harassment? And the answer is yes. And I've worked with men where they believed, for all reasonable reasons, that they were in a consensual relationship with a subordinate, a woman in their organization. I've got two situations that stand out in my mind. And they had every reason to believe that this was a consensual relationship, but after it broke up, the woman came forward and said, I only was in that relationship because I felt that I was under duress and I was under pressure to do it. And whoever's truth it is,
how
it doesn't
horrible.
Really matter. Yeah. And that's the part that I think people don't necessarily expect. The two men that I worked with were heartbroken and also very much at risk professionally, and they had a personal liability risk because the women came back with a claim of quid pro quo sexual harassment. And in that instance, it's both the organization and the manager who could be held liable. And the whole time they thought they were in, you know, a relationship that was mutual.
That she wanted to be in.
Yes. And it may have been, who knows what the truth is, but there definitely are cases that would support that even a relationship that is seemingly or starts out to be consensual, that can change over time. And it is all the more reason to go along with your instinct that keep the, I like your fishing off the pier analogy, but keep it separate if you can. And in the instance that relationship may develop, there's a point in which one or both of you may want to decide on a different career path or a different company. You know, that's always hard. You know, how serious are we? How likely is it that we're going to stay together? All of those things are difficult, but I think that's where, if you identify that there's a relationship starting, it's not necessarily time to leave the company. And sometimes these things just happen as they do. But having a trusted relationship, either with your leader or with someone else in human resources, to say, this is starting. We don't know where it's going to go yet. We're not ready to make a final decision, but we want to make you aware of it so that we can set up whatever boundaries we should so that no one's questioning or the influence that the other has. You know, I think there are some opportunities to just disclose it so that you're not making your own independent decision around whether or not there's undue influence. I think people need to be really clear that continuing a clandestine relationship where there's a reporting relationship is risky to everybody involved, hugely risky.
Well, I think that's very actionable. Thank you. I would not have thought of that. So point taken. I just have two more questions for you. So let's talk specifically about the example of does a woman need to worry about losing her job or about limiting her opportunities for advancement or promotion if she goes to HR or reports a problem? And I realize that's a huge question, and I'm sure in the past the answer was almost always yes. And so I guess I'm asking about trends and what you see and how can a woman set herself up to win?
I would say that right now, in November 2017.
Timestamp.
Yes, timestamp. And, you know, the pendulum could swing the other way because there's nothing new about sexual harassment. And I remember Anita Hill in 1991, you know, really being brave and calling it out. And she was victimized for having reported the issue. And I think so often that's the story we've heard, and it's caused people to go underground. And right now, in the current dialogue of our nation, there is no better time for someone to come forward with their concerns. And I think there's some definite best practices around how you come forward. But I think speaking up now, you would have far less concern than at any other time in history. I think it's very important that when you bring in your concern, that you focus on the behavior, not your emotion, not what they should have known or what they should have done differently, but objectively as possible, describe the behavior. And there may be a policy that very specifically addresses that form of behavior. Educate yourself before you go in so that you can refer back to the policy. And I think that also signals that you have done your homework, that you are speaking objectively, and that you're looking to resolve a problem. Because this is a problem not just for you, but for the entire organization if it's happening. So coming in saying, I'm here reporting this concern because I want the behavior to stop and I want to partner and help in addressing this problem. I think also understanding that there are very clear restrictions around retaliation and that you cannot be retaliated against for having brought the concern forward. Now, that's always been the law, and there are a growing number of retaliation claims, but I think with you going in and acknowledging, I know that I cannot be retaliated. I expect that that's true, and I'm going to be asking for your support and making sure that that doesn't happen. When you come in educated and directive, I think that really helps a lot. And that ultimately you want the problem resolved and you want the behavior to stop, and that you're willing to cooperate with whatever investigation process they have.
Wow.
That makes you not a victim. That's you solving a problem. And I think it really makes an impression.
That's very powerful. Now, do you have that written up on your website anywhere?
No, but I'm thinking I might need to write a blog on that.
Yeah.
But I think that's it, you know, bringing it forward. And the other thing that I would say, which I think is really critical, is that it's not just you as a target or as a victim of the behavior that empowers you to come in and speak up as forthrightly about unacceptable behavior. If you are aware of a situation, have seen it, heard it, know about it, this is the place where conspiring to keep secrets only hurts us all. And being able to step forward, even if you're not the recipient of the behavior, but knowing about it and helping correct it, is also powerful for everybody.
Is there a time when a woman needs a lawyer? Is it when HR isn't responding, or are lawyers only brought in if you're going to sue for damages?
That is a great question. And as a lawyer, I want to think that lawyers can be hugely helpful advocates in helping to address and resolve situations, not simply filing lawsuits. And in fact, I think they can be most effective when you have someone supporting you, especially if you as an individual don't feel that you have a voice, or you're not being heard, or there may be a high level of risk. And so thinking about, how can I bring in a lawyer, not necessarily to threaten a lawsuit, but to be a partner in being heard, I think that can be very, very helpful. And I would not have people think that a lawyer is only necessary when I have nothing else to lose and that I'm ready to file the lawsuit. I think they can be a really proactive partner. The dilemma is that not everyone has the wherewithal to cover an hourly fee early in the process.
Right.
And so that then becomes another component there. But I think it's always worth, if you have an issue, you can usually meet with a lawyer for free for an initial consultation to kind of assess and get their read on the situation. I think that's another way to really equip and educate yourself, and then look at what the options are beyond that.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we've done a great job covering this topic from a financial viewpoint. Is there anything I didn't ask you about, Tucker?
Well, not anything.
It's so tempting, but I know that you have more than enough material to work with, so I'll step back.
Okay.
You know, actually, there's one thing that I would say that's interesting. When you think about sexual harassment, I was giving you definitions, but I think the real issue here is, what are people's experience? And this is commonly talked about. It's certainly within the literature here, but if you ask women, how many of you have been sexually harassed at work? It's a relatively small number of people, a disturbingly high, but smaller than you'd think, number of women who would say, I've been sexually harassed, or people generally. It's about 1 in 4. But if you describe some of the behaviors that we're talking about that people might have encountered, and then ask them a question, did you find it unwelcome? Yeah. Did you find it offensive? Yes. That category of people who are experiencing unwelcome and offensive sexual behavior or gender-based bias behavior goes up sometimes as high as 85% when you ask the questions that way. And when you look at it definitionally, they've just then self-announced that that's a more accurate percentage for how prevalent this is. So I think there's a lot of lack of awareness about what is sexual harassment, or what behavior might be tantamount to sexual harassment, and that when people self-report, they usually underreport. And then they're not even speaking up about the concerns because they're afraid they won't be taken seriously, or it'll be diminished in some way. But it's much more prevalent than people could ever imagine.
So frustrating. Frustrating that people underreport true being a victim, and when we have a culture of victim blaming.
I think male outrage over this is so important, and it's something that you're seeing right now that is really happening, which I think makes this also a safer time to come forward. That any man who's got a wife, a daughter, a sister, a mother, this is their issue too. And certainly, we talked about this earlier, men can be sexually harassed. It's not as common because it's a power issue. And until more women are in positions of power, we probably won't see the same proportion. But we definitely, need men to be a part of the solution in the way they're raising the concerns.
So that was amazing, right? And I think Tucker's most valuable contribution in that conversation was that framework for, how do I take this to my employer? How do I go to HR? What do I say? And I think it really enlightened me, because if I had to design that conversation, I think I would have come probably from a victim standpoint. And you can see that she recommends you definitely go in as your own advocate and as a partner with your HR team and with your employer, who obviously don't want sexual harassment to be happening. And so to a assume that you're going to get it worked out in partnership with those folks. So take heed. My next guest is Darren Lipinski. Darren is a pedigreed and successful attorney. He's in the state of California. He's the senior trial attorney at Lipinski Employment Lawyers. You can find out more about them at lipinskilaw.com. We'll put the link to his website in the show notes. And you know, I'm not going to read his entire bio. It's about 300 words. He's basically a very successful and professional and expert educated attorney. If you have a problem like this, you should definitely contact him. And frankly, he has a voice for radio. I think I could listen to Darren all day long. And I knew when he and I concluded our conversation that I had made the right decision to include these two guests and their two different viewpoints. You know, Tucker's perspective is really from inside the firm. She wants to prevent sexual harassment from happening. And Darren and his team really take over if that effort is not successful and if there's a big breakdown and a big issue that needs to be resolved. So please enjoy this conversation with senior trial attorney Darren Lipinski. Darren, welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Thank you for having me.
How do you get into being a trial attorney in sexual harassment cases? Did you target that as a career goal, or how did that happen?
Well, I've always had an interest in assisting people and in civil rights battles and trying to equal the power dynamic, particularly in the workplace. And I felt that this is the best way I could use my skills in order to do that and help people.
So when you say trying to equal the power dynamic, how most men want to take advantage of the current power dynamic. How did you become someone who wanted to do the opposite?
I grew up in a family that was very active in civil rights. I have cousins who marched with Cesar Chavez. My family has always been mindful of people who have been persecuted or the underdog. And I guess I had a good upbringing that led me to believe in the same causes and fundamental rights that we have. I was not concerned about being in power because I felt that my abilities will take me to a place they should be and that everybody should be treated with respect.
And so for many years, sexual harassment has been going on, but now it seems to be coming to a head. And that may just be from a media coverage perspective. You have kind of the inside line on how things are actually going in people's real workplaces. What's your perspective? Is this, you said coming to a crest, or is this wave actually reflective of what's going on in workplaces, or are things actually the same?
Well, it is coming. The wave is coming to a crest as far as people coming forward. What's happened under the surface has always been going on since I've been practicing, and I started practicing and doing this 20 years ago. There has always been sexual harassment in the workplace that I've seen. Folks who've been subjected to it have come to me for assistance. What has changed, it seems, is the attitude that we have as a society to that harassment, and are we willing to put up with it?
Now, when clients come to your office, just out of curiosity, how often does a woman decline to file suit or move forward or make her claims public because she's embarrassed?
Well, at the point she comes to my office, she's usually at the point where she has come to the decision, whether through her own internal reflection or discussion with family members in a support system or both, to actually come forward all the way. When they come to my office, they usually understand that they need to do whatever is necessary in order to remedy what's occurred, including the filing of a public lawsuit. Rarely do I have somebody who comes to me and says, I need the help of an attorney, but I don't want anybody to know that I'm complaining. Okay. Because the two cannot coexist, unfortunately, for the most part.
So how would you describe the way someone should know if they should reach out to an attorney? You have what would be going on in the workplace that would make that an appropriate next step?
Well, if someone is subjected to an uncomfortable environment, someone is making comments or gestures or showing images or even worse, physical touching, and it's clearly based on sex, the fact that they're a woman or they're a man, and that's why this is occurring, they should come forward. Now, I always encourage people, especially in larger companies, to attempt to resolve it internally and go through the HR department. Oftentimes, unfortunately, the HR department, though, is more interested in protecting the company than the victim. But it's important that at least the employee, if possible, tries that step, at the same time documenting what's occurring to make sure if they have to come see a lawyer that that's all documented.
And so is there a scale of harassment that makes it, you know, for example, someone patted me on the backside 3 times and I told them it made me uncomfortable. I went to HR. They didn't do anything about it. Is that really grounds for a lawsuit? Is there any kind of bright line or decision rule there?
Well, that's an excellent question. There is no bright line, so to speak. The standard is pervasive or severe. The more severe it is, the less pervasive or often it has to be. The less severe it is, the more often it has to be in order to be actionable. But if someone feels uncomfortable in the workplace because they were patted on the rear end, they should certainly go make a complaint. Because if they're retaliated against for making that complaint, it's not necessary that the behavior they complained of rise to the level of sexual harassment. If they try to nip it in the bud, so to speak, and they complain and they get fired, they would have a retaliation claim. It also depends on who's doing the patting or who's doing the harassing. If it's your direct supervisor or somebody higher up in the company, then it would be a more serious offense because they have the ability to make adjustments to your workplace that are not desirable. If it's a coworker, generally the harassment needs to be more pervasive or severe for it to rise to the level of a claim.
Okay. And so it's somewhat subjective.
It is somewhat subjective. In fact, it has to be unwelcome. And that's something that is subjective from the person's who's complaining's perspective, that it needs to be unwelcome. And it also has to be offensive to the reasonable standard that a woman would have in that situation in order for it to be actionable. So there's an objective and there's a subjective element to this.
Okay. And I would imagine you have two kinds of people come into your office. Tell me if I'm wrong here. The first kind is someone who's let it go way too far, and it's both persistent and objectionable, and it's on a grandiose scale. And the second is someone who maybe just is litigious by nature and just wants to hire an attorney. Am I way off base?
Well, you may be off base on the breakdown. There are people who have called in or have spoken to me or my office, and the facts they present are something that just doesn't rise to the level, or it's just there just isn't enough there. And it may very well be that they're particularly sensitive, mm-hmm. or it may be that they're interested in making a buck. But the vast majority of people contact our office were truly harassed in a way that they shouldn't go on in the workplace. So unfortunately, there are, what in my experience in 20 years, a small number ruining it for the majority who have legitimate complaints.
Okay. And if you choose to take on the case, how many people who call your office do you take a case with?
I take maybe 1 out of every 100 cases.
Wow.
It might even be less than that. I handle about 10 to 15 cases a year. We're very, very selective in what we take.
Wow. Okay. And so are they paying you while you're working the case?
No. The majority of my clients are unable to afford my services on an hourly basis. Mm-hmm. Even executives, that most of the folks who come to me have either quit because the working situation has become so incredibly intolerable by any standard that they had to, or they've been fired for complaining. So people that are fired, they don't have an income. And so most people are unable to pay me. So what we do is we operate on a contingency agreement where we take a percentage of whatever is won. And if it's zero, the percentage is zero. And that's a risk we take as civil rights attorneys in representing people who don't have the means up front to take on big companies.
So this idea that a woman would have had to quit or been terminated because sexual harassment is going on is really, really the meat of what I want to help my listeners avoid. What advice would you have for someone who really wants to have a successful career and avoid these kinds of issues? If you were, you know, giving fatherly advice to someone, what would you say to her?
Well, I am a father. So,
so I imagine you've said this.
And of a daughter as well as two sons. But the advice I would give is follows. I represent people who also are still in their existing workplace, although it's rare. The advice I would give is that you immediately attempt to stop the behavior by expressing your objection in a way that is that would not be considered to be insubordinate, using profanity or throwing something at the person unless it's absolutely necessary, but saying, this isn't okay with me, and making that clear, and then making a complaint that's documented in writing to the HR department and attempt to work it out internally, because these companies understand, even if they don't want to help their employees, they understand that it's in their best interest to pay attention to these claims, and perhaps are able to resolve it internally without the need to hire an attorney.
Right.
So that's what I would recommend. Just stay silent. There are people who have to make personal decisions. They're in an industry where they're employed by the only game in town. And if they make a complaint, they're afraid of being fired. They'll never be hired again. They have to reconcile just how bad is it. How bad is it for me that I am willing to go and complain? Because you could always get fired and then you can sue for retaliation, but you're still fired. But my advice generally would be to make an internal complaint, make sure you document it, and make sure you don't wait.
And include details, date, time, what happened, what you said, what the other person said, right?
Absolutely. You want it detailed. You want it almost contemporaneous at the same time it occurred or shortly thereafter. And you also, if there are any witnesses, you want to make sure that those witnesses' names are given as well.
Okay, great. And let's see. So let's say there is a lawsuit filed. What can a person expect? How long does it take? What's the range of potential awards? How does it go from there?
Well, I'm licensed to practice in California and only California, but California is probably has the most examples of lawsuits and what you can expect. I'm not sure how long it takes a case to get to trial in other states, but I can tell you in California, you're looking at a good 2 years from filing most times until the matter gets to trial. And about 2 to 3% of these on average get to trial. The rest resolve or are dismissed. If in fact you're successful at trial, you can expect an appeal. And that can take another year or two. So these matters can take 4 to 5 years if you go all the way to the end.
So you're probably hoping for a settlement.
Yeah, well, I think closure is a good thing for a client because they're able to move on. Litigation, you asked what to expect, and it can be very brutal. We protect our clients as much as we can, but everything can become open season. My understanding of how courts are outside of California, they're more liberal in allowing an employer to look at all the Facebook posts and things of that nature and really get into other behavior by this person who's complaining. So another thing I'd recommend to folks who bring a lawsuit is to understand that their Facebook and all their social media could very well be seen by the other side. So it's important to be mindful of what you post. You also don't want to delete anything because you could be accused of erasing evidence. But you want to be very careful what you post, and you need to set all your social media to private.
So I usually think of California as being a bit anti-employer. I'm surprised to hear you say that California is more liberal in terms of letting people introduce social media posts in court or in a court document. What kinds of things, for example, scantily clad photos, or what kinds of things are considered evidence?
Well, and perhaps I wasn't clear. The outside of California, as I understand it, is more liberal. In California, there are some pretty significant privacy protections.
Ah, okay.
However, if someone is complaining they're suffering emotional distress and the other side gets wind from a friend of a friend of a friend who has access to the Facebook post that this person is out on a riverboat in Laughlin drinking funnels of beer and having a great time and scantily clad or taking her top off. It could be evidence that this person isn't suffering as much as she says or he says they are.
Oh, so the propensity to have a Facebook persona could come back to bite you because we only want to report what's good and happy and positive and optimistic on Facebook. And if you're filing a court case for damages due to distress, that's not going to work.
Correct. And that's exactly it on Facebook. And we all know that we have friends that we all want to put our best face forward. And some people may have a different idea than others of what that is. But understand that 12 in California, 12 licensed drivers known as jurors that don't know you could be seeing this and being asked to determine how much money you're entitled to as a matter of emotional distress. And that is not helpful to convincing a jury that you're distressed. Obviously, if you're not distressed, then you don't have anything to worry about. But these claims and this behavior often leads people to significant emotional distress and sometimes psychological disorder.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Okay, so a range of potential outcomes. How long if we don't go to trial, we're looking at some kind of settlement. Obviously, you don't want your case to be dismissed. What's the percentage of outcomes? How many cases get settled versus the other outcomes?
Well, I would say that those cases survive what's called summary judgment. And that's when a lawyer for the defense brings a motion to the judge and says, even if everything they say is true, it should be dismissed. Okay. I can tell you from my own experience in 20 years in a harassment case, I actually never had a case dismissed on summary judgment for harassment. But there are stricter requirements and stricter judges outside of California who really look to the pervasive or severe. It wasn't that bad. And it's pretty amazing to see some of these decisions as to what wasn't, quote, that bad, unquote, to constitute a claim. So it can be tossed out on summary judgment. But if you get past summary judgment or they don't bring one, I would say a good 97% of them settle.
Okay. Okay, good to know. And where do you start asking for damages? How does that go down and what do people usually get?
Well, my calculus as far as damages, the way I try to calculate damages is, one, I look at lost earnings because they can be significant if someone's been fired and they're an executive and that adds up quickly and they've lost earnings and benefits. So that has to be factored in. And then there's emotional distress and you really have to discuss with the client how much they're willing to reveal because the more you claim, the more the other side's able to get. But if someone is truly distressed, that could be significant and really dwarf the loss of earnings. Then you have what's called punitive damages, which is punishment damages that can be awarded in these types of cases. It can be substantial. And very helpful to the person pursuing their claim is if they win, they get their reasonable attorney's fees. So that can be extremely beneficial in resolving a case. Because the law has determined that these cases are so important, they're civil rights cases, that if they win, they get their attorney's fees, and those could be well over $1 million by the end of a case. But they could range from not a lot if they get a job 2 days later and aren't terribly distressed to millions and millions of dollars. It just depends on what those things show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then one thing we said before we came on the air that I would ask you to talk about is you specifically have a lot of knowledge in the state of California. Can you talk a little bit about the broad differences between the federal regulations and California law?
Sure. Under federal law, the law is under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And there's two types of sexual harassment under that law. Quid pro quo, meaning you succumb to my sexual advances or conduct or comments or don't oppose them, and I will benefit you employment-wise. Or, more often than not, if you fight me on this, I will make life hell for you in the terms of compensation, conditions, or privileges of employment. In that situation, if that occurs, the company is liable. There is no need for the company to have knowledge of what occurred. They are automatically liable. And there's also hostile work environment under federal law, and that's severe or pervasive. Now, under that law, federal law, the employer has a defense. If they have procedures in place to prevent harassment and the person did not take advantage of those procedures ahead of time, hence why I talked about going to HR and making complaints and attempting to resolve it internally, then they get a defense. Now, under California law, if a supervisor engages in any kind of harassment, the company is strictly liable, whether they knew about it or not. They have no defense. Doesn't matter if they have every sexual harassment policy under the sun. If a supervisor engages in sexual harassment, then the company is responsible for any damages that come out of that. So it is much more broad as far as the liability that employers have in California.
Okay, so... So, and that is a good segue to a new perspective that we talked about, which you would be able to discuss, which is the perspective of a business owner. So that sounds scary to me. I'm an employer. I have three employees. I'm the only supervisor in the company, but you know, that's the last thing I want sort of on my watch. So what advice do you have for business owners who want to run a good, clean shop?
Well, you're only as good as your people. And if you want to run a good, clean shop, somebody does something crazy that's sexual harassment and and you had no indication ahead of time, there's really not a lot you can do.
Yeah.
You certainly want to check references. You want to do whatever background check is permitted under the law of your state to make sure that people do not have a history of this or some kind of felony. And in some states, it's illegal to use felony convictions of some kinds to exclude people from employment. But a lot of states don't have that law. And there might be felonies that indicate that someone might have the propensity to engage in harassment. You want to check references. You want to speak to folks who employed these people in the past. And you want to be smart at the hiring process. Then you also want to take complaints seriously and act immediately to fully investigate the complaints and take remedial steps if there's an indication the harassment occurred. Even if there's an indication that there was some kind of quote unquote horseplay, the fact that someone complained about it means that even though they were playing along, they didn't necessarily feel like they wanted to, but that they had to. So that person who engaged in it needs to be disciplined. I'm talking about the person that's complained about and perhaps separated from the person who complained. You also do not want to retaliate against the person who complained because that will hand deliver a lawsuit to an employee, and rightfully so, if you use that as a basis to retaliate.
So a lot of this is...
Common sense?
Common sense. I was going to say the good person standard. Do your research. Go to work for good companies. I mean, as an employee, you aren't doing a background check going into work for an employer, but you can ask about things like, how's the support from HR? What are your, you know, women's advancement platforms? I mean, I'm trying to think off the cuff of what I would ask if I wanted to know if this was a female-friendly environment. And I certainly have worked in Silicon Valley in several very non-female-friendly environments. And, in retrospect, I did experience sort of the interview process being very... I don't know how to say male dominated, a little bruiser-ish. But I don't know what other symptoms would lead me to think, oh, this isn't going to be a great company. And then from the employer, I don't know if you have anything to add on that perspective, what you would look out for in the interview process as a potential employee.
Well, there are sites online, as I understand it, like Glass Ceiling, I believe, .com, door, or
I think it's Glassdoor.
Yeah, well, there are sites that are online where people have forms, and there are people who just gripe. But there are legitimate things that might be posted that gives you pause for thought on whether you should go work for this company. You might also, through friends of friends or LinkedIn, you may want to go on LinkedIn and see who's worked for this company that you may know, and speak to them about the environment there. Raising these things in the interview can be tricky because, sure, you want to know about this stuff, but it could also, unfortunately, red flag you for somebody who interviewed but just didn't get the job.
Right.
It's hard to prove that that's the reason, but there are several ways outside for you to speak to people and get a vibe of the company and an understanding of how they treat people.
Yeah, I think it's everybody needs to beware. Well, Darren, is there, as an expert in this topic, is there anything I haven't asked about or anything else that you would add knowing my audience?
I will just add this. There is as I said, crest of a wave where people are feeling empowered to come forward. If you've been subject to sexual harassment and if you've been injured by it or damaged by it, and you want to make sure that doesn't happen to somebody else, you're going to want to come forward. And if you have a desire to come forward, you're going to want to talk to somebody who obviously knows how to pursue these claims, or you're going to want to make an internal complaint of harassment. There are statute of limitations, which means that if you wait too long, you may not have a claim anymore. And they're different for each state. So you need to be aware of that. And there is an opportunity for people to come forward because there is strength in numbers and there's an attitude shift in society right now that fortunately is giving courage to those who have been victims to come forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And that really is why the topic is timely. Darren, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate the interview.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Profit Boss Radio. If you liked it, share it with an artist or creative that you love. And whether you're a painter or a mathematician, may you have all the freedom and prosperity you want.